Got my hair, got my head, got my brains, got my ears, got my eyes, got my nose, got my mouth, I got my smile. I got my tongue, got my chin, got my neck, got my boots, got my heart, got my soul, got my back, I got my sex. I got my arms, got my hands, got my fingers, got my legs, got my feet, got my toes, got my liver, got my blood, I've got life. I got my freedom.
Welcome, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the French Connections 9/11. Well, Monday, 11th day of September in 2006. My name is Daryl Bradford Smith, and 5 years, ladies and gentlemen, 5 years we have been fighting and battling to get the facts out about what happened on that day, why it happened, and who benefited from it, and who is going to be placed on the hook for having done it. And these answers have, we've been working on them very, very diligently over the last 5 years, and many of the questions that everyone has had have been answered. That this was an inside job, that is pretty much accepted by most people who've looked into it. The second point that we've come to over the last couple of years is that it was done by a group of Zionists, on behalf of Zionism, but not necessarily all the characters were of a specific Jewish or Christian Zionist bent, but on their behalf. And the beneficiaries of this are clearly the Israeli state, as well as the controllers and the power brokers within Washington and London. So we're going to bring up a special guest that we have for this 9/11 discussion, two guests, in fact. Eric Hufschmidt is going to be with me. Eric, are you with me?
Yes, I'm here.
Nice to have you here, Eric. And the other person that I'm really pleased to have with us today is Christopher Bolin from the American Free Press. And the three of us are going to discuss some of the points that we've been able to glean over the last 5 years. The first, Eric, I want to go to you on this first part here. The collapse that day. I had somebody on South African radio ask me today, how did I know that, this was an explosion? And I said, well, first of all, the metal, the way the metal was taken off site told me something was wrong right away. But we can see from the collapse of that building, explosions in the photographs, we can tell that there were people in the hole, in the opening of the building, that were not affected by any heat. So how could that have melted the main supports? In other words, the whole story they told is nonsense. What's the real story as far as you've been able to figure out?
Well, it is. And what's really interesting, though, is when you consider if the government, if they had been smarter and they had said to you, oh, look at the towers, Al-Qaeda must have secretly put explosives in those buildings. Imagine that. And then imagine we are trying to convince people that, no, it wasn't explosives, it was fire. We would be laughed at. We would have so many people telling us, are you crazy? Fire doesn't bring down steel buildings. Fire has never done it before. It has never done it since. We would be ridiculed for having no scientific backing for this fire theory. And yeah, and not only that, but then people would say, oh, then how do you explain Building 7? Al-Qaeda must have put explosives in that building. How do you explain that? Imagine saying to people, no, Building 7 came down because of fire. It wasn't Al-Qaeda explosives. So what we are actually doing is what makes sense. We are saying the fire theory is nonsense. The explosive theory makes sense, and we are being ridiculed. Matt, you got to picture it being the other way around to realize just how ridiculous this situation is. Mm-hmm. This theory from the government that fire brought these three buildings down is absolute nonsense. and yet people are clinging to it tightly like a teddy bear. They just can't bring themselves to face the possibility that those towers were blown up. But all the evidence shows it. The seismic data and the video shows that the structure of those towers disintegrated completely in 8 to 10 seconds. The seismic data is proof. You can see it. The entire structure is gone in 8 to 10 seconds. That means it was shattered as fast as objects fall through the air. And the government's theory that it was falling floor by floor just doesn't make sense when you look at the seismic data. Look at the video. It was coming down too quickly, too quickly.
And I got another question for you, Eric. In spite of the fact that they were able to steal away all of the evidence, metal evidence at least, and send it to China, for the first time in history, an accident scene or a disaster scene was actually carted off immediately after. But the powder that was left behind, the pulverized cement, the pulverized TV screens and computers and everything, this could not have happened from a collapse. I mean, we're talking about microscopic pieces of computer. How could that possibly be without explosives?
Well, that's the other thing. When buildings fall down, the pieces inside just get crushed. They might break into pieces, but they don't pulverize into dust. And so what you'll see also is fragments of people's bones were found on rooftops. And you got to remember, they're fragments of bones. They're just, things were blown apart. Everything was shredded. Computers, office desks, filing cabinets, people, everything was shredded into little pieces and then blown hundreds of feet. They're all on top of rooftops. They're everywhere. And there is no way to explain this by buildings just falling down. This is all evidence of explosives, especially the concrete. Concrete doesn't just pulverize itself. You have to use jackhammers to break that stuff up. So
this is steel reinforced concrete as well.
Well, I know it's in steel corrugated pans. I'm not sure how much, if a lot of reinforcing, but it's like 4 to 5 inches thick of concrete in every floor. That's a lot of concrete, and you can't find any of it. All of it's gone. And
well, worse than that, now, there are other things that they did after the fact that pointed to the fact that they were covering something up. How could a pristine passport have been located?
Yeah, I know that.
One of the people involved, supposedly. I mean, come on, this is so ridiculous that trying to sell that to somebody with a brain, they would look at you and say, get out of here.
Well, that's why the scientific evidence is in our favor. And the thermite, if you look at the thermite, the video, there's a video that shows this molten iron pouring out of the building just seconds before the building came down. Now, we don't know where the thermite came from. Professor Jones has already identified it. He got a sample of some of the rubble, and he's already identified it. It is thermite. We don't know if the thermite was in the building before or whether it was on the airplane. It doesn't matter. We don't have to know the details. This is something that people have to understand. We don't have to know all the details. We do know that video that shows the thermite coming out of the building, the molten iron, that is proof that the government is lying. That alone is proof.
Yeah.
That is not coming from a hijacked airplane. That is coming from pre-planted thermite. And now that alone discredits the government theory. We don't have to have 500 ways to discredit it. We only need one, and we've got already dozens of them.
Well, Christopher, do you have any questions for Eric about this first phase of this discussion?
No, no questions. I just wanted to say one thing very briefly, that Professor Stephen Jones at BYU has been put on unpaid leave. He's like Galilei, fighting the Inquisition of the Church. For his findings. But the most important thing that he points out is that, as I reported in 2002, something that really perked his interest was that molten metal, at that it was described as molten steel, although it was molten iron mostly, was found in the basements of both towers and Building 7. And that's fairly fundamental. Professor Jones returns always to Building 7 as being the anomaly that cannot be explained, that basically is the weak link in the whole story. And it's important to remember, as Eric was talking about the pulverization, is that the air samples that were taken starting on October 3rd by Professor Thomas Cahill of UC Davis showed that the fires beneath the rubble were cooking at a temperature higher than the boiling point of metals. And that extreme heat and that residual heat, that molten metal was found weeks and weeks after these structures had been sprayed, the rubble had been sprayed with water. So we're clearly dealing with something, a very exotic, extremely hot exothermic reaction, aluminothermics. We're dealing with thermite. That's very clear.
And that explains why there's so many health problems right now, lung problems and kidney problems. And see, the people, when these buildings fell down, you know, most people were thinking, well, they just fell down and they're throwing dust in the air. It's no big deal. It wasn't dust. It was pulverized buildings, pulverized office furnishings, pulverized people. And then, like Christopher just said, there's evidence that this stuff was just boiling underneath the rubble, putting out tiny little particles that people continued to breathe for weeks. And
right.
This is why there are thousands, literally thousands of people today with lung problems, with health problems, permanently damaged from this. And some of them have already died. People like William Rodriguez are they have trouble just climbing stairs now. And some of them are even worse than that. You know, they're on oxygen. Rachel Hughes, who was talking with us, Jimmy Walters' European 9/11 tour. She's so bad right now. Her lungs are so bad. She has to get oxygen every week. So there are people. You know, they think 3,000 people died. Well, 3,000 people died that day, perhaps. But there are thousands more who have been permanently injured. Some have already died, and some will die soon.
Now, Eric, I have some questions about the run-up to this, and that are important. I think we know that. Some work on the heating ducts and air conditioning systems were done in the weeks prior to this. Do you have any information on that from what William Rodriguez and others said about people visiting and there was changes of staff members and things of this nature?
Oh, actually, there's going to be something coming out just today. It's going on the internet. You might remember her. Sophia has put out a new video, and she's got she's interviewed somebody who was in, I forget which floor, the 90-something or 100th floor of one of the towers, and he was saying just before the attack came, he would be coming into his office, and he'd find this dust, this grayish dust all the time, and he'd hear these noises going on. These sound like drilling noises. And he didn't think too much of it. He's like, well, there's construction going on, but what this could be is that people were actually drilling into the concrete and getting ready for explosives before, or weakening the structure or doing something up there, because this concrete dust that he kept finding on windowsills, on the furniture, on everything, and the drilling noises, see, it's a sign they were preparing ahead of time. Then you got other people saying there was power downs, you know, where they had chances to, once you take the power down, you have opportunities for people to run up and down the building to install explosives. You also had, as soon as Silverstein got control of that tower, you got reports that he was changing some of the maintenance and the security personnel. And so now he has control over this. And Larry Silverstein, people have to look at who he is, who his friends are. You know, the guy he's friends with Frank Lowy, Rupert Murdoch, Benjamin Netanyahu. This guy, people have to look at who he is. He got control of the towers. He had already building 7, and he's changing the security and maintenance personnel.
Well, what's strange about this man is that he's a among other things, he's a strip club owner in Brooklyn or Bronx, I think, or something, or Queens. Runway 69, but how does he come up with $130 million of money to borrow? He borrowed it, from what I understand, and of course he made $3 billion on the disaster. That's quite a markup. If you're doing the math.
Christopher has some of that.
How about these questions here? We got Marvin Bush involved here. Neil Bush, is it?
Marvin was, well, you see, this is another interesting issue. Marvin Bush, they're saying, was a principal in the company called Securecom. But you have to ask yourself, is this really an important player in the whole situation, or is this a distraction? Because it was Silverstein who had control of the building. It was Silverstein that the news reports are saying is changing the security personnel. Marvin Bush may have been involved in Securecom as like a investor or maybe an advisor, but who is really doing the work? Is it Marvin Bush? Or is that just the distraction, you see, to get you away from Silverstein, Netanyahu, Frank Lowy, and the others?
Mm-hmm. Well, I got a couple of more questions on running down this line. We've got, just afterwards, we had art students that had been milling around and were caught driving moving vans, Eric. What was, they actually were a couple of arrests, weren't there?
Christopher knows that one a lot. Yeah, Christopher has that one. Christopher?
Yeah. Well, there were the, of course, there were the five dancing Israelis who turned out to be Mossad operatives who were caught, you know, videotaping and celebrating. On September 11th, I was in New York City, happened to be, and I was, when all this stuff happened, we started driving across Pennsylvania to get home. And, I remember listening at about this time of day, midday, on September 11th, 5 years ago, and I remember, I think it was Ted Koppel came on and said that five Middle Eastern men had been caught videotaping and celebrating the attacks on the World Trade Center. Now, he never came back on later to explain that these were Israeli men, and I wrote an article about it and speculated that these men may very well have been Israeli intelligence based on what they were caught with. They were caught with multiple passports. They had a van which tested positive for explosives. They had thousands of dollars stuck in their socks, and they were they had Arab clothing. They were they disguised or they dressed themselves as Arabs, you know, for effect. And this all looked to be very much like a planted you know, element of a false flag terror, which it turned out to be. The Forward newspaper, that is the a Jewish newspaper, leading Jewish newspaper in New York City, actually reported a few months later that, yes, in fact, these men were Mossad. That's Israeli intelligence. Now, you have to ask yourself, these men went back to Israel and eventually did a radio show and a television show in which they told their Israeli viewers and listeners that America has never suffered terrorism like Israel, and we were there to document the event. That's pretty close to what he said. So you have to ask yourself, you know,
how did they know that event was going to take place?
Oh, that is a question. See, if you look at Mike Rivero's site, What Really Happened, he has an article there, and that's a question he asks. He says, right here, I'll read it to you. How did they know there would be an event to document on 9/11? Then he writes, it doesn't take Sherlock Holmes to connect the dots of the dancing Israeli Mossad agents. Here's the most logical scenario. Then he lists, here's Mike Rivero listing six points. And the first one, the Israeli movers cheered the 9/11 attacks to celebrate the successful accomplishment of the greatest spy operation ever pulled off in history. Now, what you got to realize here, this is what Mike Rivero is, you have to wonder, why is he writing this? He is implying in this article, and this is not just him, Wayne Madsen does it, the Loose Change producers do it, they are saying these people were spying on the Arabs, they were following them around, and they were observing them in order to provide America with evidence that that the Arabs were up to no good, that they possibly were going to attack us, and they're giving us warnings. You see, they're giving us warnings, and Mike Rivero, point number three, he's saying they pre-framed the Palestinians. He is saying that these Israelis were simply observing the Arabs, realizing that they were going to conduct this attack. And then, you know, warning America and letting it actually happen a little bit. See, it's a twist on what really happened.
But, Eric, we're talking about, according to Carl Cameron's December 2001 pieces on Fox News, we're talking about more than 200 Israelis were apprehended.
That's right.
60 of the Mossad mover types who were picked up around the United States have examined.
And weren't some of these driving other moving vans that also tested positive for explosives?
Yes, in every case, I wrote about it, half a dozen of them. They were caught in Tennessee and Pittsburgh and Pennsylvania. They were caught in Washington. They were caught all over the country, North Carolina, often in the immediate vicinity of a very sensitive military base. But when they were caught, the local police always did tests of the vans and got positive results for explosives until the vans were turned over to the FBI. And of course, the FBI always turned up negative tests. This is, of course, the FBI that's under the directorship of Michael Chertoff, our Asiatic Israeli American head of Homeland Security. At the time, though, it's very important to understand, at the time, Michael Chertoff, who is an Israeli-American, whose mother was one of the first Israeli Mossad agents, he was in charge of the investigation, the criminal investigation of 9/11, which was really, of course, a non-investigation.
Well, wasn't he also in charge of the 93 investigation out of the Jersey office?
Yes, he managed the New Jersey investigation of the first attack at the World Trade Center. Exactly right. Mm-hmm.
And the FBI also was there to investigate Paul Wellstone's accident. And not only that, but if you take a look at the Bali, Indonesia bombing of that nightclub in October 2002, there were even Indonesians complaining, what is the FBI doing here with so much authority? The FBI is at all of these major terrorist attacks, and they're not there to help. They're not exposing the crime. They're confiscating evidence. They're threatening witnesses. They're saying nothing is here. This is not testing positive. This is go away. This is all evidence that the FBI is a federal bureau of Israel. They are not helping us. They are at every single one of these attacks. People have to realize this pattern. You know, when you start trying to solve a crime, you look for patterns. You know, what they call the method of operation. The FBI is routinely at these crime scenes, and they never, never expose them. They are always confiscating information, threatening people, telling them to shut up, and it's all evidence that the FBI is under their control.
We also know that they were big in the silencing of what happened in Oklahoma City as well.
Right.
They're at all of them.
Let me just say one thing. Eric was talking about how people like other researchers have said that this Israeli Mossad presence in America, in which 200 of their operatives were arrested. Imagine if 200 were arrested. Imagine how many people were involved. Imagine how many Israeli operatives were actually involved in this in the United States. I can give you names about another 100 more at the higher levels. But I want to say one thing is that these people who are defending this Mossad involvement are saying that they were there to give us warning. Well, then perhaps they could explain why the Odigo company, the Odigo employees who got very clear to-the-minute warnings on their text mail on September 11th, on the morning of September 11th, hours before the first plane attacked. And they received these warnings in Israel and in the United States. Their base of operations in the United States was two blocks from the World Trade Center. Why did these employees of this Mossad-linked company, Odigo, now part of Converse Technology, why didn't they pick up the phone and call the mayor's office and say, we know the time, we know the place, it's going to happen? Why? Because this is a complete lie. Mossad wasn't there to warn the American people. They were there to make it happen.
That's right. That's right. And now here's the interesting thing. Now we can go one step further with this discussion. I think the people who benefited from this, first of all, wasn't it Netanyahu that immediately after said this is going to be a very good thing for Israel?
Exactly.
And then he actually kind of backed off that statement, but he made it in public.
Yes, he was so gleeful, but he said exactly basically what you said. This is very good for Israel, and then he tried to back off it. But he was beside himself with glee. But one has to remember, this is the architect of the war on terror. He wrote about the war on terror, how the West can win, all the way back in the mid-1980s.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, this is one of the masterminds of this whole evil plot. You know, he runs this counterterrorism, so-called counterterrorism institute called the Jonathan Institute. He's one of the highest players in this whole game.
And hardly maybe Netanyahu that's they're trying to get reinstalled as the Prime Minister of Israel right now, trying to get rid of Olmert.
Yes, and it's very important to understand, like Eric was saying, that Bibi Netanyahu, for years prior to 9/11, up until 9/11, would call Larry Silverstein every week on Sunday, the first day of the Jewish week, and have a conversation with him wherever either one of them were in the world. So, you know, this is the Netanyahu-Silverstein link. And this is why Silverstein wound up getting the buildings rather than Vornado.
And wasn't it Netanyahu who was at the 7/7 bombing of London the day?
Precisely. Precisely.
Yeah.
And so was Rudy Giuliani, who is now Sir Rudy Giuliani because he's done something or other for the Queen of England.
Which is unconstitutional, by the way. An American official cannot have a honor from another king. But the thing is that what's interesting is that this Benjamin Netanyahu was staying, I think, at the same hotel that Eric and I stayed at when we were out there in Russell Square. He was staying about a block away from Tavistock, where the bus blew up, which is also where the Israeli, the International Consultants for Targeted Security, the Israeli firm, the security firm, that ran security at Boston's Logan Airport on 911. The bus bomb in London went off in front of their London headquarters, directly in front of their building.
And wasn't one of their affiliates' trucks was parked right in front of the bus, which happened, it was called Star Demolitions, in fact. One of the affiliates of that company was sitting there with a truck that actually does bombing of buildings. I was shocked. I saw it. I looked on the side and I did a search on this company. It says they're a demolition company and it's parked right near the bus.
There's another point I want to bring up about this demolition company. When we're talking about the preparation of the World Trade Center for demolition, historically in the United States, there are two companies that do these big demolitions, and they work together. That is Controlled Demolition Incorporated of Baltimore. That's the Loiseau brothers, who were involved in the cleanup of the World Trade Center. Then they work with a company called LVI, which is owned by a man named Burton Fried, a Jewish man from New York, Burton Fried. And Engineering News and Report reported on September 13, 2001, that LVI, which does the pre-placing and the pre-weakening of the structure. So when they do a big job like the Aladdin Hotel, LVI goes and does the preparation of the structure and weakening of the structure, and then CDI comes in, Controlled Demolition comes in, and places the charges. So if you're looking, and like I said, LVI, Engineering News Report Magazine, said that this company had worked for years, for the prior years, in the World Trade Center, working on asbestos. I called Burton Fried and I said, what kind of work were you doing in the World Trade Center in the year prior to 9-1-1? And he said, it wasn't us. It was another company, named another company. He says, I think they've gone out of business. But if you're looking at companies that would know about the planning or the pre-structure work in the World Trade Center, you would have to look at LVI. Seriously, you have to look at LVI and Burton Fried.
And Burton Fried, of course, has connections to Israel as well, or at least
people. Yeah.
Well, they haven't done a good job of this, guys. Were they really expecting people to just roll over and not look into this? I mean, this is pretty sloppy stuff when you come right down to it. What would have lead you to the idea that this was such a bad job?
They banged on the media. They banged on their Zionist-controlled media, like Ariel Sharon said, we control America. And they know that they have this locked, airtight control on the dominant media in this country. And they had Michael Chertoff. Michael Chertoff was their ace in the hole that would control the investigation. And Michael Chertoff did that. He sent those 200 Israeli suspects. These are real terrorist suspects. They were sent home on visa violations. And then he went up and rounded, you know, psychiatrists and Arabs and Muslims of different colors and stripes and considered them suspects of terror,
yeah,
which they never were. And this is the outrage. One has to understand that the group behind 9/11 in this country, the group behind the war on terror, and the group behind this damn police state that they've created in this country is a very, very small group of people. I mean, there are the Chertoffs and the very small group of these people, Yorans and Yorens, they're all Israelis. And they have magnified their power through the media, through the Zionist-controlled media. But without the Zionist-controlled media, they could not have done it.
Derek, do you have a couple of questions about white supremacists being involved in trying to cover up where all these paths lead to? Because what we discovered, you and I, when we were digging through all this stuff, was that they were trying to with vitriol, trying to get people to start using this Jew card, and so that people would be maybe turned off by our investigation, because of course not all Jews are involved in this. We know that, and so what they were trying to do was make it seem like anybody pointing to them was just being a racist.
Well, yeah, and when I first was trying to get this information out in early 2002, people wouldn't listen to me, and so I thought, well, here, Matthew Hale and these other guys, they're always complaining about Jews, and I figured, well, they'll love this because Israel's involved in 9/11. So I would, you know, I posted a few messages. We were contacting them by email, and I discovered they have no interest at all in exposing 9/11. Even David Duke, National Vanguard, all of them is what I discovered. None of them seem interested, and they would try to turn you away from it, in fact. And so my conclusion is that they were controlled. I didn't know if it was by Americans or by Israelis at that time. I wasn't quite sure. But
well, I know Southern Poverty Law has got their fingers in that pie all the way up to the knuckles there.
Yeah, but it turns out when I mentioned this to Christopher Bolin, he even said, yeah, he looked at Matthew Hale and came to the same conclusion years earlier.
Well, what information can you add to that, Christopher?
Well, I mean, Eric was just talking about this Matt Hale guy. He came out to my local library and gave a speech, you know, I went there and I listened to his 2-hour speech. It was very boring, punctuated by these Nazi-style salutes with this shout of Rahoa, which is supposed to mean racial holy war, some nonsense like that. And I wrote a little article, but I said that, you know, he's not a compelling speaker, and he seemed to me to be a agent provocateur. He seemed to be just doing this little work for some masters. And I believe that's exactly what he was. And then his masters turned on him. You know, when you're a naive goy and you partner up with Zionist elements, you can expect to be flayed and fried at the stake eventually, because it's a pact made in hell. You don't deal with those people. They will eventually turn on you and nail you to the wall.
Well, of course, you know, this might make you guys laugh, but David Duke is trying to join my MySpace. He's trying to join me on MySpace. Of course, he was denied quickly, but I knew right from the start that this guy's stuff smelled like Morris D's in Southern Poverty Law. You have any information on Southern Poverty Law's activities with these people?
The group, all of them, it doesn't seem to matter to me. I mean, to me, it's all of these people. I don't really make a distinction between any of them. Every single one of them, what they all have in common is that they have these childish insults about, the white supremacists have childish insults about other races, other religions, and then people like the Southern Poverty Law Center and the ADL are the opposites. They're coming in saying, well, we'll protect you from them. And what it seems to me is that they're the same group of people. They create their enemy and then they come in with the solution to it.
Right.
And I don't even make a distinction. I don't think we should try to figure out, you know, are they, you know, is Southern Poverty Law working with ADL? I mean, with some of these details, it's like the details for how they blew those towers up. We'll never know, but we can see there's something wrong here. And we can see that it's all the same pattern. They are creating the anti-Semites. They create the white supremacists. And then they come in and say, well, we need these laws to protect ourselves from these crazy Nazis.
There are no Nazis. It's unbelievable.
That's the thing is that the Zionist state of Israel has always needed anti-Semitism. And if you read the founding fathers of Israel, they always said that the anti-Semites will be our best allies. People like Theodore Herzl said that because anti-Semitism gives impetus and energy to the Zionist movement and excuses it and gives it a reason for existence. And without anti-Semitism, most of it is, of course, Zionist made and controlled. I mean, my God, look at for example, just look at Iraq 50 years ago or 60 years ago. The Zionist Mossad agents went to Baghdad and blew up the mosques the synagogues in Baghdad in order to compel the Iraqi Jewish community to go to Israel.
This is
the kind of thing they do. And they did the same thing in France. They did the same thing in the United States.
Yeah.
And by controlling both sides of a discourse, you, of course, control the outcome.
Now, let me ask you about a guy named Gene Corley. He was involved in Waco, Oklahoma City, September 11th. I mean, this guy is rotten to the core. What are his connections?
Right. Well, he used a big shot with Portland Cement, and now he has a company, I think it's called CTL, in Skokie, Illinois. As you said, it's correct. He was the scientist who came in and bolstered the government's version of what happened at Waco, Texas, regarding the fire and the death of those people there, which was a massacre, a Holocaust. And then he also was the chief scientist of the government report about what happened in Oklahoma City, which was, of course, a pack of lies. And then he was drafted to do the World Trade Center, American Society of Civil Engineers Building Performance Study, which is also a very, very flawed report.
Their go-to guy for their media lies has been this guy.
Yeah, but this brings up a point people have to realize. The reason they keep going to him over and over, it's a sign that as Bolin just said earlier, this is a small group. They don't have a pool of 10,000 different engineers to pick from. If they did, right, they wouldn't keep picking the same guy over and over, because right, this is giving themselves away. When you keep going to the same guy, you start seeing, like I said, that method of operation. The
right,
same, the same people, the same construction companies, the same demolition companies. You see that.
Let
you
me say one thing, Eric. This is very interesting. You know, on September 13th, the first report came out about the collapse of the World Trade Centers. 2 days later, it came out by a professor named Zdeněk Bazant. Bazant is a Czechish word for swan. I'm almost positive he's a Jewish man. His daughter's married to a Jew, and he's from Czechoslovakia, and he works at Northwestern University, a private school in Illinois. And he came out with a report explaining how the World Trade Center collapsed on September 13th, based only on what he had seen on television, without seeing any of the evidence. Now, you have to ask yourself, and he was made a fellow in the National Academy of Sciences the following year. But like Eric says, they don't have 10,000 scientists who are going to come forward and bolster their claims. So they have to have their agents in place. And yeah, it's interesting that the engineering study that was done, the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, relied heavily on foreign-born engineers, people from Iran and Turkey, who barely speak English. And yet these people are called in to analyze and describe the engineering behind the collapse of the World Trade Center. You know, don't we have enough Americans who speak the language and understand tall buildings to explain this for us?
Well, you know, let me ask you about foreign involvement here, or foreign knowledge. We got von Bülow in Germany. What was it that he declared and said? This guy knew, Andreas von Bülow, he knew it was an inside job and said it almost immediately. Whatever became of his declarations, and have there been others?
Yeah, von Bülow is a very nice man. He was the former Parliamentary Control Commission. He was the head of the Parliamentary Control Commission in Germany, which oversaw the budget of Germany's three or four intelligence agencies. He lives out there in Bonn, and I went and saw him in November of 2001. And when I talked to him, he, like many others that I spoke to who know something about this, pointed directly at the first instance at this being an Israeli operation. He said the Mossad was behind it. But one of the things that he told me that's very interesting, you know, as a former intelligence supervisor, he said that 95% of the work of intelligence agencies around the world is disinformation and deception. And our CIA and the British MI6 and MI5 are no different. You have to ask yourself, really, who does really control Al Jazeera? And why is it that Al Jazeera is the only agency that always gets these fraudulent videos and audio tapes of Osama bin Laden?
Well, we've known for a long time Al Jazeera is nonsense. It's the mainstream Americans that think it's okay. How about others? I mean, how could you get the entire French apparatchik to back this up? Are they and the Spanish and the Italians and, I mean, and on and on, Sweden even and Finland, and how did they all get signed up to this? Their intelligence services must be aware that it's an inside job.
Right. I agree with you. I think that the intelligence agencies around the world, the serious ones, the respectable ones, like the MI6 and the Russian intelligence and the French intelligence, they know this is a cover-up, but there seems to be a gentleman's agreement between intelligence agencies not to reveal each other's hoaxes. I mean, as Americans say, look at the landing on the moon, the fake landing on the moon. The Russians and the Europeans, they certainly know that the Americans haven't been to the moon. Or if they have, they would know that. You know, and yet they allow these hoaxes to go on. It's like a gentleman's agreement, I think.
Well, you know, speaking of Al Jazeera, I just wanted to point out there's a Israeli businessman, a millionaire named, I don't know if to pronounce this right, Haim Shiban. In 2004, they were saying he was trying to get 50% of Al Jazeera. Now this is,
well, he's now successful at it, isn't he?
I don't know exactly what happened, but what they don't realize is that they're buying up the media all over the place. It's not just America. They're buying up the Arab media, Australian, Canadian, European. They're all over. The same group of people is buying up everything, and then they're controlling it. And this is how they have so much control over other nations, too. And then, of course, they're promoting their own political candidates in different countries. So some of the French and British and other politicians could be their blackmailed pedophiles or whatever they're doing. You see, they're helping to finance them. They're helping to promote them, and this is how they're getting control around the world. People aren't looking at them as possible enemies. You see, people are right now, they're trusting everybody from Israel, especially in America. They regard Israel as our best friend. It's constantly repeated in the media. Israel is our best friend, our only democracy, they call it, you know, the democracy of the Middle East. And so when Israelis come and go in the Pentagon, you know, years ago, nobody would have thought anything strange. They're our best friends. Why should we worry? And then no one thinks, well, what's so strange that almost everybody in our media is a Zionist? You know, people think this is good. They're our friends. They're here to protect us. Nobody's looking at them as possible suspects or as enemies.
Right.
And so they're walking right around among us. They're walking through our halls at the Pentagon, and they're in our FBI. No one's thinking, who are these people? Who is this Michael Chertoff? Who is Dov Zakheim? Who are...
Eric, they control our communications and our computer networks.
And no one, right now, no one is even thinking it's strange, though. See, this is what nobody is yet considering them possible enemies, so nobody's even worrying about this. No one's looking into them. This is one of the ways they're getting away with this, by constantly making us think we are Judeo-Christians, and they refer to the Islams as Islamo-fascists. What we have to do is change it around. Start calling them Judeo-fascists. You know, do the tricks they're using. Start referring to them as Israeli fascists.
Right.
They're fooling people with their terminology, with their advertising. Look at the movies that come out. There's almost every time you see a movie with an Arab in it, they're some sort of violent maniac terrorist. And of course, the Jews are always coming out as being innocent victims, always. And people don't even think, you know, this is propaganda. This isn't the truth.
No, it isn't the truth. And I know it's not the truth, because I've got living experience with very kind neighbors and people around. I mean, France has the largest Arab population in Europe, and very very welcoming people. And in fact, what you'll see on French television is a vilification of this community here. I mean, they're doing it everywhere. They're vilifying this group everywhere in the West. And I'm wondering, you know, there has been a sea change, Christopher, and I want your take on this. Of course, 50% say they don't believe the story anymore, but what we've got to do now, and our challenge, this is your challenge and Eric's and mine, is to get them to take a look at our evidence, because this is the stuff that's going to make the difference. Otherwise, we're just going to play musical chairs with these criminals.
Well, it's you know, the fifth anniversary today, and you know, in the United States, in the media, it's just saturated with 9/11 stuff, because what they're trying to do now at this point, they consider this to be a very important date 5 years after, and they're trying to make the fairy tale the truth. They're trying to get most Americans to accept the fairy tale, so of course they don't question it. But you know, the media has never addressed the unanswered questions of 9/11. We're going to deal with the situation. I know it's going to deal. We're going to be a situation where we're going to become like the new Holocaust deniers. You know, the official version will be, yes, this is the 19 Arabs. Never mind the fact that seven of them turned up alive someplace else. Never mind all the evidence to the contrary. We're going to become the new Holocaust deniers, because their official version, the fairy tale, is going to be, you know, cast in stone.
It's going to become codified into law, maybe.
Well, no, children are going to start learning it in school. See, this is what happened to me, because I grew up thinking Oswald killed Kennedy, because it's in the school books. They control our school books. It's in our encyclopedias. And I was thinking, well, it says it right here in the school books. Our teachers wouldn't allow it if it wasn't true. This is what used to fool me. I used to think, if it was true, why would they be teaching it to us in school? How could so many people allow such a thing? And you have to...
I'm going to tell you guys, this lie is not going away. They're not going to get away with it. There is no way on this earth that these people are getting away with this crime. There is no way.
Well, that's why,
I'm
right?
I'm telling you right now, there is no possible way. They have no chance of getting away with it. None.
That's right. But now what you see them doing is they're going to expose it themselves. This is the next trick. Like you say, they can't stop it from coming out because of things like the internet and the DVDs. So what they're doing, and what's fooling people, is they are promoting their own people. They are letting their own people expose it. That way, when it comes out, they are the investigators. They are what people turn to for guidance. And people are always telling me, when I bring this up, they get mad at me and say, oh, you're jealous that Loose Change video is getting so much
attention. Stephen Jones, Eric O'Shea,
and Alex Jones.
No, he's not being suppressed.
A lot of the things that are being written in these books that, I don't know, McCoofka, whatever, these people are writing books about the subject, they're taking Eric's work and my work and not even giving us any credit for it.
Well, they're trying to...
Listen to this, Christopher. They've right off of my guest list for about 3 weeks in a row, four out of the five guests I had ended up on Wing TV's guest list. And not only that, when I looked at the articles that we had placed on our site, they almost mirrored identically. And interestingly enough, their books are getting translated into French and Spanish. And then circulated in Europe. This is astonishing. And then people are so thick that they don't see the deception. This is incredible. When you take a look at this, it's so clear. And yet these people end up on Coast to Coast with George Norrie.
That's right.
Hello, guys.
Well, not only that, but remember on my one article after I complained about, Wing TV and Mike Piper and how I said things like, they don't even expose many of the crimes. They don't mention Netanyahu like Bolin has exposed, and they don't complain much about anything. Well, on the Piper's last show, he brings somebody on to talk about, forget which one of those camps in Germany, bring up the Holocaust, but they are what they did. That's the first time he's ever done it. People don't get it. When I say, well, they're not bringing up Netanyahu, well, then they do it suddenly. And then people say, well, what do you mean he didn't bring it up? He just did. Well, that's
the Alex Jones switcheroo. The guy's got 12 years as an investigator, and he finally comes to Zionism in the last month.
Yeah, what this is like, it's like fortune tellers. They try to figure out what you want to hear, and then they give it to you. And politicians do this too. If you say to a political candidate, but you're not telling us about cutting taxes. Well, then he will. He'll say, oh, well, I was going to do that. I'm going to cut taxes for you. And then if you say to him, but you haven't talked about immigration, then he'll talk about immigration. They tell you what you want to hear. People are such suckers for this. And this is what's happening right now. If you tell Alex Jones or Jeff Rantz or any of these people, well, you're not talking about Netanyahu. Well, suddenly they will. And if you say to them, well, you're not talking about Marvin Bush is not in control of the security of World Trade Center. Well, Silverstein. Well, then they'll suddenly switch and do that. They will do and say anything to stop this crime from being exposed by us because they have no control over us. They want to be in control. And if people don't catch on to this, they are going to expose the crime. They will be in the position to decide what to do about it. And what they could easily do is then bring in their own candidate or their own replacement.
There's another thing here. There's a historiography of 9/11. And you and I have contributed to the historiography of 9/11, what we've been able to do, your book, your DVD, and my articles. I mean, they are there. The people can see. They can see who's been writing about this since 2001, since 2002, and who's Johnny Come Lately. So they can see that. I mean,
but most people don't do the research. This is how they. It's remember that remark someone said about the. They said attributed it to one of the CIA officials that nobody reads.
Right.
When they met, if all you have to do is look at the Warren Report and you realize they lied to you. You don't know what happened. You don't know the details, but you can see they lied. But they can put it right in front of your face. Nobody.
Well, just read Jerry Ford's book, who was on the Warren Commission. Read his book, Portrait of an Assassin. In the first pages, he talks about how the FBI called him, or the Attorney General in Texas called him and said, look, we got a problem. This is Lee Harvey Oswald, an FBI informant. That's in the first page of his book. I mean, like you said, people don't read.
Yeah, and see, or they'll read, what's being promoted. They follow the crowd. Right. They'll read the Harry Potter books because that's getting the promotion. They read about Tom Cruise. But what they've got to realize is this is another deception. A very big one is happening right now, and that is to fool people into thinking, Webster Tarpley and the Loose Change people are the exposers of 9/11.
Right.
And they've got to watch out on, look at this. And you'll see, think about it in terms of just, you know, a good way that might help people is to look at that picture of those three boys that are tied up on the bed. You know, Johnny Gosch is one of them. Yeah. The other two, they don't know. You've got to think about this sometime. You imagine you, as a child, picked up by this crime network. You're tied, you're laying there in bed, and you know, you're taken to be sold as a sex slave. And
yeah,
someone tells
you. He can't go home again. He's called his mom, but he can't go home again.
Yeah, and imagine yourself, and you're in this position, you're getting raped and beaten or whatever, and someone tells you, oh, don't worry. The loose change people are exposing it. And sure, they're not telling the whole story, but don't worry. Eventually, it will come out.
Right.
And so, in the meantime, just let them rape you. Don't worry about it. That's what's happening right now. People are saying, oh, don't worry that Alex Jones isn't saying the whole story. Don't worry that Loose Change isn't completely honest, because the story's coming out. And in the meantime, these wars go on. They're still, our country's still falling apart. People are saying, oh, don't worry that they're not telling the truth. In the meantime, just let it all continue. And people don't realize they're falling for the latest trick. It's deception.
Right.
They're basically saying to you, let it all go on, let the criminals continue, and I just hope that something in the future changes. Well, it's not going to change until we make it change. As long as they're in control, it's like Netanyahu. Who was it? One of the leaders, I think it was Netanyahu, made the remark. Oh, well, Olmert made it, I think. He was saying, well, half of Lebanon's destroyed. How did we lose? Someone made a remark to him, you know, it looks like we lost in Lebanon. And he responded, half of it's destroyed. What do you mean we lost? And he's right. They just destroyed half of a nation. And how can you call that losing? Israel, sure, they lost a few people. Who really lost here? Think about this. And not only did Lebanon lose, look at America. We're still over there wasting our money, our resources, and our people. We're not the ones winning.
Well, you know, Eric, another thing is that this war on terror, I wrote before it started, that the war on terror would result in greater terrorism, just like the war on drugs resulted in more drugs in the United States. And look at every day in Iraq, we have this false flag terrorism, what I call false flag terrorism, in which scores of people are killed and maimed on a daily basis, something like 3,000 a month. And this is success. This is what they plan to do. And we know that the British and the Americans and the Israelis are behind most of these car bombs that are occurring in Iraq.
That's right. That's right. And you know, now they're gearing up for a false flag over in Syria, so they have an excuse to make a corridor through Syria. Why? Because they've got, you know, there are some economic things involved here. These guys don't plan this stuff without having some goals. They want an oil terminal built in Haifa Harbor. They want the pipeline to go through Iraq and into Syria and then across Lebanon and down into their port area. And I mean, they want the water from the Latani and other places. They've got, you know, secondary goals.
Yes.
From this sickness.
Balkanization, Middle East. But let me say one thing about this Ehud Olmert, because this is a character who's not well understood in the West. The current Prime Minister of Israel, Ehud Olmert, he's a Likudnik, he's a close ally of Ariel Sharon, but it's very important to understand that his treasurer, a person he's worked very closely with, was a man named Menachem Atzmon. And Menachem Atzmon is the CEO of that company we were talking about involved in the 7/7 bombing in London. ICTS company, International Consultants of Target Security, owned Huntley USA, which provided the passenger screening and security at Boston's Logan Airport on 9/11. This man is a co-defendant and a very close political ally of Ehud Olmert. He was convicted in Israel of a felony. He's a convict, and yet he was the man in charge of security at Boston's Logan Airport on 9/11, and he's been exonerated. He's been given protection by the U.S. Congress, so there won't be any accounting for what his security company did at Boston's Logan Airport. This is a controlled nation, my friend. This is a nation, you know, controlled by Zionist criminals.
That's right.
Have to understand that the Israeli government is not a government for the Jewish people, la, la, la. It is a Jewish criminal network that has roots going back 200 years.
Or further, even.
Well, at least 200 years. If you go back, you know, into the 1800s in Poland and Belarusia and Lithuania, you find the core families involved in this, in the very highly placed families in the United States today, and they immigrated to this country mostly in the 1910s, 1920s. They came over, they registered on census as Jews from Russia, but they often wrote down that they spoke the language Hebrew. And, of course, nobody spoke Hebrew in 1900. Only people who had reconstituted, who had tried to reconstitute the language as a political gesture to becoming Zionists and creating this new Zionist state in Palestine. So you have to ask yourself, why did they come to America? Well, I mean, the same reason that Amit Yoran and Shlomo Yoran and these people came to America. Oh, I think it's Shalom Yoran. This is a very, very strange family, a very group of people. They control our computers, and they have incredible influence. Imagine
that. And there's a layer above them, Christopher. I want to mention a couple of names here. I'll give you a few. Annenberg. I'll give you another one. Levy in England, the Levy group. How about Honig in Austria? How about Warburg in Germany? How about Schiff in America? I mean, these are above that layer that you're discussing right now. They are the real money. They're the hundreds and hundreds of billions behind these thrones and behind these decisions. And we can't, you know, if we're going to ever get rid of these people, we actually have to look at the top of it.
Yeah, of course. No question about it.
And if you're wondering what's going on down in Mexico right now, what you need to understand is the term Marrano Jew.
Right.
Because the Marranos are down there controlling and turning that place into a nightmare.
Venezuela as well.
But speaking of going to the top, see, this is the other pattern you see in all of these others. They don't go to the top. They stop at something like the Council on Foreign Relations or the Bilderbergs. They don't go beyond that. You know, that's the low level. The Council on Foreign Relations is just one of their groups. And so you'll see people exposing the Council on Foreign Relations. That's not exposing something. You know, that's not going to the top and telling you who's actually controlling and creating it. Who created the CFR? That's what you need to know. Who is running it?
People have names. Like you say, Eric, the people have names.
But a lot of the people who expose it, you'll see, like Alex Jones and Bob Dacey, they'll bring up the Council on Foreign Relations as if that's it. That's who we got to go after. Or the Bilderberg Group. You got to say, who created it? Who started these Bilderberg meetings?
I'll tell you who started it. The Oppenheimers started the first one, along with a guy named Cecil B. Rhodes, who started the Roundtable in England, and they set up a sister organization in America. And that was Rothschild-funded money.
And then there's one other thing I should point out. You know, you're always hearing about the Skull and Bones, Yale's Skull and Bones. And they'll tell you George Bush was one of the people in it, and John Kerry was in it, right? You've heard that. And they'll say, well, the Skull and Bones, they're in control of the world. Now, you got to think about this for a minute. If George Bush was taken in to this group, how high are their standards? And I'm not saying this to be insulting. You've got to think about this seriously. If he is in it and John Kerry is in it, what are they really? It is a group of rich kids. These are not the masterminds to the world. This is a group of rich kids. You know, think about it. If he was taken in as a dentist, the guy's not a dentist. If a dentist organization took George Bush in, it's a sign they're not really a dentist organization at all. It's just a bunch of rich kids trying to pretend that they're dentists. The same is true with the Skull and Bones. Look at the members. These are not the brightest group. These are not people who really want to work or learn or think. These are rich kids. And so,
but you find out that they're Jews behind the scenes here. Look at Kerry. His name is Forbes. He changed his name to an Irish name so he would be able to be involved in politics.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that
his real last name, his family name was Cohen.
Cohen.
Yeah, but what I'm trying to point out is people are trying to stop with the Skull and Bones. They're trying to say, well, the Skull and Bones group, that's in control of the world. What I'm trying to point out is that's not in, they're not in control. If anything, they're just the puppets. They're groups that are used by the people in control. You see,
exactly.
People like George Bush, if the Skull and Bones takes him in, you've got to realize this is not an organization of very intelligent people.
Right. Look, for example, here at the Mexican election they just had, presidential election compared to ours. They were very similar. Very close race, ended up with just a few votes between the winner and the loser. In Mexico, what happened? The former mayor of Mexico, Obrador, he protested, he demanded a recount, and his protests went on day for day for 2 months in Mexico City. Now, look at what John Forbes Kerry did. John Forbes Kerry and his partner, they caved. They conceded defeat before the votes were even counted in Ohio.
They're
puppets. It's all
fraudulent election, and for Americans to accept such fraudulent elections, they shouldn't wonder and they shouldn't pretend that we live in a democratic republic. They shouldn't pretend that we're a democracy in any sense of the word. Our elections are meaningless.
Yeah, but also, see, all you have to do is look at George Bush and John Kerry. Look at their lives. They've been on this planet for decades. What have they ever accomplished?
Right.
Intellectually, nothing. They're nothing but rich kids. This is what people have to realize. These are the puppets, and it doesn't do.
Well, he was a rich kid who was put into business by Osama bin Laden's older brother. Remember that.
But the point, and then this is what's so important. It doesn't matter if we replace them, because if we don't go for the people behind the puppets, we don't change anything. We're just suckers once again. And that's what you see with most of these so-called truth seekers. They're saying, we got to replace Bush. You'll see them. We've got to get a Democrat in there. We've got to stop these Republicans. That's not going to do it.
But, Eric, how can we do it? Tell the listener, how can we do this? How can we make changes?
Well, what we got to have to, first of all, do is tell people that we got to somehow reach enough of a group to realize that our biggest enemy is Israel. These Zionists, these bankers, the media, it's not the Arabs. It's these people that we are currently regarding as our best friends. And that's the first thing we have to do. And we got to somehow get them out of here. We've got to somehow, exactly, I mean, it's not hard. If we had enough people, we could do it easily.
But Eric, if the United States and the NATO forces that are in Lebanon, if they did a regime change in Tel Aviv today, would that cure the situation, or would that just
be
a temporary fix?
No, it would not, Christopher, no.
Well, we still have to go for the banking families.
Because Zionism at the highest level is not originated from Israel, although Israel is the beneficiary. It's originated in Bordeaux, in London, in Zurich, in New York City, in Los Angeles. It's got its representation around the globe in all the major cities. And so the fact is, no, Zionism is a morphing,
right,
multinational
international crime network. It's a crime network. Exactly.
Yes, because they've got what they are is they're in Australia. Take a look at Australia. Look at John Howard. He was in our country the day before 9/11 with Bush and all. He was over here. These guys are all working together. It's all the same network. We've got to deal with the Zionism and the international bankers. We've got to deal with it's more than just Israel now. I mean, it's all over the globe.
It's like Eric, it's like the Simon family of Indiana and the Ratner family of Cleveland, Ohio. These people are multi-billionaires, yet they are key players in the Zionist network, but they don't even live in Israel.
That's right, and the Simon family is supporting Democrats, so that right there is this, plus Lee Hamilton. See, it doesn't matter who you vote for, Democrat, Republican, it's all puppets of these Zionists. And so we've got to let people realize it's like a cancer, it's like a fungus, it's traveling throughout this world.
Wait, Eric made a very good point that I want to touch on that. Lee Hamilton, the former congressman from Indiana, was the co-chair of the 9/11 commission. You have to ask yourself first, the first question is, why is this former congressman, the co-director of a congressional study? You would expect it to be an acting congressman. But we also know that Lee Hamilton, this very corrupt politician from Indiana, is on the payroll of the Simon family from Indianapolis, these people that own all these shopping malls across the United States.
Yeah.
And this man is on the is on the payroll as he has this organization called the Woodrow Wilson Foundation, whatever, where he's the director. So he's directly being paid by the Zionist family while he is investigating 9/11. Well, there's a serious conflict of interest there because many of the key suspects in 9/11 are, of course, Israeli.
That's right. And when you look at a guy named Ben Venista, for example, Ben Venista had connections to the oil company over in, Con Oil? What's the name of the oil company in Afghanistan? Karzai's company.
Amoco. Unocal.
That's right.
Unocal.
And he was actually the lawyer for Unocal Contracts. And of course, you know that the president of Afghanistan was one of the senior executives of Unocal Afghanistan before he became the president. It's almost laughable that
I think his days are numbered. I think Hamid Karzai, they took out the governor of one of the provinces yesterday, Pakhtai province or something. I think Hamid Karzai's days are numbered.
You know, it's astonishing though that people fall for these lies, Christopher and Eric. At the point we're at now, with the amount of information, all you need to do is listen to this one broadcast, and your hair should light on fire. I mean, come on, there are so many things we've brought up in this hour, and we've only touched on a small portion. There are so many more things that we could go on for hours here.
But we don't get the publicity. See, this is what the problem is. They control the media, and so they're putting their side out all over the place on the internet. In fact, remember I once complained about how KPFK and out here would not promote me. They would no longer put my stuff on their radio. I don't know if you can remember this, but I made this remark that they're willing to talk about loose change. Well, on their website, you'll see a remark explaining why not. It says they will not promote me, or they're even mad. They won't even promote Jimmy Walters' DVD because it mentions me. And it's why? Because of my views on other issues, Zionism or whatever, Holocaust. This is outright censorship. They're basically saying, and it's in writing. You can look on their website. They're saying they will not say anything about me because of these other issues. And they won't even promote Jimmy Walters' DVD because it mentions me. This is a blacklist.
I'm on it. And Chris, you're quick becoming blacklisted. We all are. All three of us are.
But
we're not invited to any of the parties.
But the point is that you see, if you have a different opinion than them on such as something like Zionism, you go on their list, and since they control most of the media, that means you're just shut out. And most people never hear of you, or if they do, they only get you once in a while. And most people will only follow crowds. And so this is why, even though we might put out a lot of information, if the people hear it, they only get it from us once. They get 5,000 Alex Jones and Jeff Rentz and the Loose Change crew. And so that's what we're fighting. We're trying to overcome this human, it's a characteristic of us, of following crowds, and we've got
Eric,
to...
Our real enemy is the dominant media. It's the cable TV, it's the network television, it's all the people that are putting on these shows and radio shows and TV shows today. I mean, the dominant media is the one that's really to blame here.
Something? They're crossing over, Christopher, and they're allowing people like Muff Kafka to go onto Coast to Coast, and they are allowing Alex Jones on CNN and on Greta Van Susteren, and so yes, they are starting to tap the alternative media, well, so-called, because it's a lie. They're bringing on their own criminal elements, and they're elevating them as spokespeople.
Well,
the bottom line is they are crossing over, and they're using resources from the criminal network that we've been facing for the last couple of years here. Mm-hmm. They're starting to elevate them to mainstream media status.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, Alex has now got he's on an FM station down there locally,
but,
too.
You know what they do is that they will never deal with what we say, just like with Stephen Jones. They will not discuss what Stephen Jones says about thermite and molten metal in the World Trade Center. They try to attack him as an individual, as a person, ad hominem attack. The same thing with me. I mean, and it's interesting, this whole question about explosives in the World Trade Center. One of my very first articles was about eyewitness evidence of explosives in the World Trade Center. I was attacked for that article by the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith. And at the same time, we're seeing now this Jewish community in Utah is attacking Stephen Jones for his writings about the thermite at the World Trade Center. Well, my God, what does that tell us?
Well, not only that, but the other argument they brought up, if you listen to the interview with that came in after Professor Jones, they brought up the UFO issue again. And they try to link these together. Stephen Jones never mentioned anything about UFOs. But what they'll do is they'll bring this up and as if it's all together. You know, all those UFO people, now they're talking about the World Trade Center. This UFO incident, this is another situation. We'll complain about people like Jeff Renz promoting UFOs, or complain about George Norrie promoting, all of his nonsense. People, they say, well, what difference does it make? Jeff Renz is exposing a lot of crime. What difference does it make? Well, it does, because it's contaminating this. And it's making people, it gives them the excuse to say, oh, it's those UFO people again. Now they're talking about explosives in the towers. I suppose Martians put them there. They did this with Professor Jones.
Right. Eric, we got to tell the listeners that they should go look at Professor Jones' recent speech and his PowerPoint presentation. It's online at Journal of 9/11 Studies. That's his webpage, because he's taken it down off his BYU site after this problem with the university there. And he has a speech that he gave at ISU, Idaho State University, and it's been updated as recently as 3 days ago. And here he obtained pieces of this hardened molten metal fragments from the World Trade Center. He was analyzing them last summer. They did a big analysis of this molten metal from the World Trade Center, and in June he told me it was primarily iron. But now their analysis shows that it contains a 1,3 diethyl propane or something like that, which is a component of thermite reactions. And so now we have physical evidence that thermite was used at the World Trade Center. This is why they're sweating, Eric. They're sweating because we now have proof that these towers were exploded.
Well, plus,
with thermite.
And I'll put the link up, but the other thing that people need to notice about that interview, after they were done talking with Jones, one of the callers calls up and says he represents some Jewish community there.
The first caller.
Yeah, and he says to the audience that he objects to Professor Jones, who made a remark that the international bankers could be involved in this whole 9/11 attack, and he says, "Well, the international bankers—that's code word for Jews."
He was out of his field there. He's a scientist, a physicist, but he was citing a person he works with named Webster Tarpley, and he repeatedly said, "This is what from Webster Tarpley's work," but they're trying to crucify Professor Jones. Professor Jones, really, he had just stuck to his science, because his science is impeccable. But they tried to get him in on the motivation. Who would have done this? You see, they didn't want to talk about what he actually knows and what he found. They want to get him into onto thin ice where they can break the ice underneath him.
And the two arguments they use, but people have to look at this carefully. The two arguments is he must be an anti-Semite, and they bring in the UFOs. They've got to look at this and try not to get caught up in this deception, because this anti-Semite stuff, they're using this as a shield, and we've got to stop it. We've got to stop letting them get away with this nonsense.
But Eric, They had Professor Jones on for 20 minutes, and then they had Mr. Goldberg and Mr. Fine on for 40 minutes talking about Mr. Jones.
Yeah, and trying
without
to...
Without Mr. Jones being able there to defend himself. Extremely unfair. This is a National Public Radio, I think, affiliate in Salt Lake City.
And it was outrageous.
Thing.
Yeah, and see, this is another one. National Public Radio. People think of that as being liberal, and they're fair. This is the other way they're fooling people. If you're a liberal, that means you're fair. You listen to everybody. You get all sides. This is nonsense. Also, look who funds these people. Look at who's supporting them. It's all deception. It's all a lie.
Propaganda radio. The P doesn't stand for public. It stands for propaganda. Eric, National Public Radio has nothing to do with the public, except they preach to the public.
Yeah, they control the public.
and they ask the public to give money to it, but there's nothing public about it all. It's funded by the same big foundations like the Rockefeller Brothers.
Annenberg is the big one.
Annenberg, of course, all of those big foundations.
And you know where you'll find Annenberg? And you'll find a lot of these people come out of Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
And you'll find them out of Carnegie Mellon. And you'll find these, Pennsylvania is a hotbed for a lot of this activity. Philadelphia is the main nest of the controllers. I New York has its place, but I'm telling you, a lot of the control comes out of Philly.
Right. And Boston.
And Boston, yep.
Phil Berg and... is near there, and so is Wing TV somewhere near there.
Well, you know, and Wing TV, of course, they've tried to vilify me by saying that I'm a psychopath. Can you imagine this? And on top of that, they've had others say I'm a pedophile. That's why I live in France.
Well,
people
have to look at. See, it's just like Christopher was saying. They can't respond to our arguments, so all they're using is insults. And people have to realize this. We've got serious evidence. They come back with insults and insinuations and emotional manipulation. This should give them away. This is one of the clues as to who is trying to tell the truth and who is trying to control.
That's right.
Well, look at what these Wing TV people did. When I got beaten up by these armed thugs in my front yard and tasered, which was seemed to be a case of Homeland Security abuse or police abuse, they only interviewed the police commissioner, the police
spokesman.
They didn't call me. And then when they finally did address the subject on the Michael Piper show, then they brought up Eric Hushman. They asked me to denounce Eric Hushman. They asked me to denounce the lies of Eric Hushman. What lies? And then they pointed to something that Eric had written on his website, and they asked me to denounce that. I mean, this is the same sort of radio like we're talking about what they try to do with Alex Jones. They try to use the radio to hang people.
You mean Professor Jones?
Exactly. Sorry, Professor Jones. What NPR tried to do to Professor Jones is exactly what they did. They tried to do to me.
Well, you know, guys, we're gonna call this a show because we've already run well over an hour. It's the 9/11 discussion here, ladies and gentlemen. You will find no better anywhere on this planet. The three people involved, myself, Eric Hushman, and Christopher Bolin, we have worked. I've given my heart and soul to this. Our country has been stolen. It's been stolen a long time before I realized it, but fact of the matter is it has been, and until the rest of the American public wake up to these facts, we are going to be living in a terrible, terrible mess. And I'm imploring everyone who listens to this broadcast to send it far and wide on the internet, everywhere you can, chat rooms, message boards, place it on Craigslist, place it on indie media, place it everywhere. Make sure that this word gets out and gets out strongly, because you will not hear a show like this on this fifth anniversary like we just went through. Guys, you have any final comments for the listeners? Christopher?
No, I just want to thanks very much, and keep up the good work. We'll continue, and we will prevail.
The truth will out.
Like Shakespeare said, the truth will out. You cannot hide murder long.
That's right. Eric, do you have any final statement?
Well, yeah, what people should be doing is saying, this is what we need on regular TV. These are the type of discussions they should stop putting up with, this nonsense that they're getting right now. Don't support the other media, the alternative or regular media. Tell them start raising your standards. Start saying, we need this type of discussion out there.
Demand the truth.
Yeah, demand. Absolutely. Yeah, start. Yes, don't. People should not just be tolerating all this nonsense. They should start demanding. Get all of this out there.
I want you to do me a favor, Eric, and ship this out to Professor Stephen Jones and let him know that we are supporting his facts and his truth. I know he's kind of quiet right now, but I'd like him to have a copy of this discussion we've just had. Ladies and gentlemen, send it everywhere. You've got to redouble your efforts now, because they are pulling out all the stops. This is our moment. This is the time we need to really buck up and fight these people. Unless we do, they may just use a tidal wave approach and bury our information. Don't let that happen. Make yourself heard. Be part of the winning side here and get these facts out. Until the next time, ladies and gentlemen, this is Daryl Bradford Smith saying be well. Bye-bye now.